B-Pod Studios.
Hi, this is Kevin Owens, and you're listening to the Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast with James Stewart and Mike Riley. Great name, Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast. So what does that mean? You guys aren't allowed to discuss if anything happens outside the ropes? What if somebody gets clotheslined over the top rope? Do you guys cover the Royal Rumble? These are questions I need answered. Anyway, you're listening to Wrestling Inside the Ropes with two geniuses who came up with this name.
This week's Wrestling Inside the Ropes is brought to you by WWE 2K Battlegrounds, featuring over 70 WWE superstars and legends. WWE 2K Battlegrounds is an all-new, over-the-top, multiplayer arcade experience featuring interactive environments and devastating power-ups. Now available at WWE2KBattlegrounds.com, and that's Battlegrounds with an S. Mike Riley, I want to dedicate much of this week's show to the one-year anniversary of All Elite Wrestling on TNT, specifically AEW having a weekly television show. But before we get there, we have to mention and talk about the WWE roster draft. Friday night on SmackDown was night one, and they have these weird rules where only so many people are draft eligible on night one, and then others are eligible night two. So here's basically the brand switches from night one to Raw, The New Day, specifically Woods and Kofi, who are the new SmackDown Tag Team Champions. AJ Styles, Naomi, Miz and Morrison, Tucker, Drew Gulak. To SmackDown, Seth Rollins, Dominik and Rey Mysterio, Bianca Belair, and Murphy. So this is all fine and well. They move the Rollins-Mysterio story to SmackDown, with Belair moving from Raw to SmackDown. WWE basically telegraphs the Street Profits switch, as if New Day winning the tag titles didn't telegraph that.
Yep.
My focus and my issue, Mike, relates to Big E, Kofi, and Xavier Woods being split up. Could WWE have at least the decency to tell their employees what's happening? And how do I know that members of the New Day didn't know that they were being split up? Because Jim Ross, Eric Bischoff, and others have publicly documented how WWE management, Vince, doesn't want to share all the details. So there is a natural television reaction. They can pick that up. And WWE also has this fear of leaks. One example that I actually lived of WWE not telling talent what the finish of a match was Money in the Bank 2019. That's the one that Brock Lesnar won.
Yep.
Running out at the end, grabbing the briefcase from Ali. And why do I know that? Because Randy Orton, who was right in front of me off camera, was stunned that Brock was one there and two that he won. So with a group in New Day that has been so good for so long and has drawn a lot of money, you could at least have the respect for your talent to tell them what's going on. And I bet because they're all professionals, they'll knock it out of the park and they'll execute the desired goal. This is sports entertainment, right? So if Big E, Kofi, and Xavier Woods are true entertainers, then they'd be professional and do the best that they can with the creative given rather than express their true feelings on camera. So have a little bit of professionalism to your performers, Vince McMahon and the WWE staff, to let them know what's going on so that they can do what's good for business, because they will. Mike, your thoughts?
I thought of the Jim Ross thing immediately on this, and to your point on that, I did think about this the other night too, coming from what we want to talk about here on tonight, on the show here. Ross was very open about that when he was on Raw as the play-by-play guy, was not notified of going to SmackDown from being on a Monday to a Tuesday, screwing up his schedule and so forth. Zero notifications, bad communication there in general for the talent. And yeah, it's just classic WWE, but the guys that they've done so well, the New Day, over the course of time, I still consider them. I think they're the greatest tag team I've ever seen in my life. I think they will go down maybe as the greatest tag team of all time. And to be at that level of a performance, to answer the bell, to do what is best for business, they will do that. And it's just a classic, you know what? Hey, it's here you are. You're splitting up three guys right there. You don't have to do it, but they kind of indicated a little while ago when Kofi got hurt and Xavier Woods was on his own and everything, that Big E would be in that singles competition right here. That's the way they're going right now. Excuse me. So I think that, you know, the writing was on the wall here. The way they put it down, though, it probably didn't have to be this way. They could have kept all three of them together. But you know what? That's just the way the cookie crumbles. And I see big things in the future here for Big E.
I think the Kofi run and winning at WrestleMania 35 is the outline that they can keep this group together and have them all celebrate. And there wasn't a need to split them all up. And they could have been one of the, and right now they stand to be one of the few groups that has been together for this long consecutively and not had a breakup in which has resulted in a feud. So maybe they just end up on different brands, but they're still New Day. They're still doing the whole act. But the whole act, like Xavier Woods and Big E cheering on Kofi at WrestleMania, added to Kofi's win. Because here's this group of friends who were put together, and they were given a lot of time to get that act over, to get that entertainment of New Day over, and they got it over. So it's a credit to them because the audience initially rejected them.
Yep.
But they kept working at it and working at it. And eventually they connected because, as we've found out with a lot of characters, it takes time for the character to become something that the audience can draw to and react to and sing along with. Rusev Day. Bayley, who today celebrates her 1-year anniversary as the SmackDown Women's Champion. Yeah. This was the day that she beat Charlotte Flair. It's all over their social media.
Yeah, but I'm trying to think here.
I know. I'm just telling you what's on their social media. That's what's on their social media.
Listen, you were there, Jimmy. You saw it firsthand, baby. And you
isn't the Money in the Bank win. This is the SmackDown win.
I got you now. I got you. Okay.
This is the SmackDown win because they had Charlotte interrupted for 7 days.
I got a double take here. I'm like, huh? That's right.
It's all over their social media, Mike.
It's all over their social media. Yep.
Because Bayley comes out with the cut hair. She smashes the inflatable tube things, and she wins the title on an inside cradle, I think it was. I think Charlotte went for the figure four. And for the figure four, try it clearly, James. And Bayley reversed it, pinned her, and she's been the SmackDown Women's Champion ever since. But there shouldn't have been that 7-day interruption. I'll tell you that. I'll flat out tell you there shouldn't have been. Bayley as a 500-plus day Women's Champion is good for business. But it took her, and getting this back to New Day, it took them a while. It took them months to get over as the performers that they are and have the fan investment in it. And that's just a testament to, one, their talent. Two, given something that they may or may not have liked, and just trying to make it their own and make it work, and for actually making it work and giving the fans something to connect with. But I think it was a Vince idea, so Vince was going to, you know, fly or die with it.
Yeah.
Which is surprising because usually Vince gives an idea 3 weeks and
right.
But, you know, we just saw Lars Sullivan back on TV, which...
What the hell's that about? Yeah, this came out of left field. Jeez.
Send him to a promotion that doesn't exist anymore, please.
And a guy that was a heavy favorite to have a big run in the Royal Rumble 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, here he is coming out of nowhere. Yep. So what the hell's this about? Yeah, it's bizarre.
Send him away. Put him in the same package Velveteen Dream's in. Send them away.
Really? You're not a fan of him? I mean, give the guy a chance, but you're not a fan of his, huh?
No, just horrible. Like,
interesting.
Freak show, has no ability, and his out of ring antics, I'm all set with.
Wow. Okay. All right.
Should be on the roster. Send him somewhere else. Get him off my TV.
You got him in the same category as Walter?
He came out. Well, so Walter, I actually respect. I just don't like the fact that he beat Pete Dunne in front of me.
Right.
but like Money in the Bank 2019.
Yeah.
Lars Sullivan's music hits, and I go right for the restroom. I'm out. Yeah. I'm not giving this guy any. I've already given him too much time in my life on this podcast.
Yeah.
That I want to, because just
hold off then. Yeah.
The heck with him. He's a he's one of those freak show attractions, and his out of ring stuff, just I have no time for. Time at all for.
No,
and this person just keeps getting opportunity after opportunity because Vince loves the look. He's an airport guy. You know what? Wrestlers aren't going through airports anymore.
They have buses.
They have cars. They live in the area.
That's where the show is now. Yeah. Thing of the past.
So when we get to Tampa, they're all going to be driving.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's the way the world's going right now instead of people flying here on out, too. So, yeah. Lars, it was a surprise to see him back. So we'll see how that run goes. But all we know is that Jay Stu, not a fan of his. Interesting.
No.
It makes me want to piss you off.
I've already given this clown 3 minutes of my life.
Yeah, well, hold off then. I have nothing for the guy, but now I'm kind of invested in him just to piss you off. So I may have to do that.
Mike, there are things that you should invest in to annoy me.
Let's see.
Lars Sullivan is not one of those things, right? So, like, yep. if you want to give me crap for Bailey beating Charlotte, want to give me crap for this person beating person, or for being anti Cody Rhodes,
yes,
or for something like that, then that's fine. That's all fair games. Go to your Google machine and do some background check on this guy. This guy has no business being in this company. None. Wow.
Okay. Understandable. Fine by me. Okay. All right. Screw Lars. Peace. Goodbye. Doesn't do it for me either. Nothing yet, at least.
All right. Watch him get a push. Mike, what was your thoughts on night one of the draft and SmackDown in general on Friday night, which, by the way, is the best wrestling show out there right now?
It really is. It's so much better than, I mean, listen, Raw may have got a little injection here with the move of AJ Styles to Raw. I thought that would be a great move last week. He's no longer on the show with Paul Heyman, so I totally see him getting a good push right away for Drew McIntyre. I love that move right there.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Heel, but from this past week's SmackDown, I just want to talk real quick on this, and we talked about this at length last week with Sasha Banks and Bayley, Jimmy. I really did not like how these two had a match on the SmackDown show, and sure, it ends in a DQ. Yeah, it sets up the Hell in the Cell,
which is what I told you 2 weeks ago it would do.
Right, but I don't like it, though. I think they're wasting the DQ spot there, and I think that you could build up more for a good WrestleMania match, and you're kind of wasting a good opportunity here where WWE doesn't realize what they've built up. They've given us a good damn story here between two of the top women from the women's division. Two of the top wrestlers in the women's division, Sasha and Bayley, right now. And they're going to give it away. They gave it away in a DQ match, a waste. No interest. Stupid. So now we got to go through Hell in a Cell. Okay, great. Again, you're going to see these two feud over and over, where I think it's going to kill the momentum here and kill any good potential storylines here on out. They're giving it to us too early. And that's where I thought they dropped the ball. Maybe we'll see it on Raw. One of them will go to Raw, but I don't think that's going to happen. Sasha or Bayley to Raw. If they're both staying on the same show, which all indications are they are right now, I have no interest. I'm really disappointed in this. And I really think they could have had something here to have us forget about it, go a little time, have one of them win the Royal Rumble, challenge for the SmackDown women's title or the Raw women's title at WrestleMania. They didn't do that. And I don't like what they did. And I don't like how we're having this at Hell in a Cell after a disqualification match, a waste on SmackDown. No interest, disgusted with it.
So what would you have done, Mike Riley, to build this story instead of that?
I would have, like I said, I would have had one of these two go to Raw or SmackDown. Have him go away. Goodbye.
No, no, no. But what I mean is if Vince McMahon tells you, you're Bruce Pritchard, right?
Yeah, yeah. Put it away.
And he goes, I want Sasha and Bayley. This story has been going on for 6+ years, dating to their NXT,
yep.
Their pre-New Orleans WrestleMania Battle Royal thing. All summer, they've been the best. I want this built to a Hell in a Cell match. Bruce Pritchard, what do you do?
The reason why I'm so upset about the Hell in a Cell is because they had a DQ match on SmackDown. That's what I hated. And if they didn't have the DQ match, I'd be all for this Hell in a Cell match.
Okay, so Vince tells you,
hate the DQ.
I want Sasha and Bayley on SmackDown because yep. we're in October and it's the night of the draft and they're two of my performers who I've invested all this time into. They're legitimately friends. People know it. They feuded. They had one of the best feuds in NXT history. And I want this match, and it's got to get you a build to Hell in a Cell. So are you switching the titles? Are you having Bayley win clean? Are you having Bayley cheat to win?
I don't have a match at all. I just have them talk. Because
talk?
Yeah. How long is SmackDown, Jimmy? How many hours?
It's a two-hour show, but there's about 80 minutes of actual time.
2 hours is all you need. That's fine. Talk. If they're on Raw, fine. Match. SmackDown, no. Talk. Build it up. Hell in a Cell. No need for match. I hate the DQ. Hate it. I don't like how they're going at it. I want a good build up here. And I think they threw something away with an opportunity for us as fans to give us a good match that we would appreciate. I don't like that. I like the old way where you're going to see it maybe once on a pay-per-view scale where people remember that match. They're going to remember Sasha and Bayley at a pay-per-view. They're not going to remember Sasha and Bayley on a SmackDown or a Raw. We're SmackDown in this case here. I want to see them remembered on a pay-per-view. That's what I want, and I think they threw away an opportunity here.
And if they do well in Hell in a Cell, people will remember that in the same way that they will remember NXT TakeOver Brooklyn, where Bayley finally wins the title. They will remember the 30-minute Iron Man match that was on NXT TV before it was on USA. It was just on the network. People remember that. I think a lot of people, maybe not as many as I think, but people remember Bayley throwing Sasha Banks out of the Battle Royal that was on the pre-show at WrestleMania in New Orleans that we were at. And it's a lower number. I understand that.
Yeah.
Because it's WrestleMania and it's a long show. And I totally get that. That's why I preferenced it by saying not as many people or whatever verbiage they use.
They need to be on the main event.
The point is, Mike, is that you're trying to do something to get them to Hell in a Cell, because if they're given the proper time and they're allowed to do what they want, they'll crush it. They'll knock it out of the park.
I'm sure they will.
You got to give the people who are watching Fox for the first time, who are watching WWE on Fox for maybe the first time, that reason to understand why they're in a story. And while we know that they've been in this 6-8 year story, maybe the person with the clicker, the guy that they're really after, because they have the hardcores, is new to this, and they've only been following Sasha and Bayley, and they're like all excited that, oh, wow, we're getting Sasha and Bayley, and this is my first time seeing it. And then it's that finish, and it's like, oh, well, now Sasha Banks has challenged for a Hell in a Cell where you can't have that type of finish unless it's The Fiend, Bray Wyatt, and Seth Rollins, and then you can have a non-finish. Or Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns when Brock runs out. But I think that they are going to have a clear finish, and I think that this is where Banks gets the title. And I don't know this, but I think Banks gets the title and gets a nice run with it.
Do you have your shot glass, Jimmy?
Yeah,
because you know what? I think they could have done a better job storytelling of Bayley and Sasha. Drink up. Let's go. Drink up. Come on. Let's go.
My WrestleMania 35 shot glass for those
nice
watching live on Twitter.
They could have done a better job telling us a whole scenario instead of a stupid disqualification match. I understand your point with the Fox audience, but do you have to have that there in that scenario? No. Get them on the microphone. Talk. I don't care about this stupid DQ match. A waste of time for me. It does nothing for me. I want them on the main event scale where I'm going to remember these two in a prime match that I'll be able to talk about for years to come. Not a stupid DQ match. Done on that.
Mike, well, I appreciate your hostility towards this. I want to ask you a question.
Let's go.
Did Steve Austin and The Rock, this is going to be right down, this is fastball, right down in the middle of the plate.
Go ahead.
Did Steve Austin and The Rock have a match before WrestleMania 15.
Yes, they did. They fought at a pay-per-view for the Intercontinental title.
Okay. So
right, didn't
they have a WWE Championship match before WrestleMania 15?
But that was a different title, though. That was for the Intercontinental title.
No. Thank you, Mike Riley. You just made my point. Do you remember the Deadly Games tournament that The Rock won?
That was an awesome pay-per-view.
Great pay-per-view. The main event the next night on Monday Night Raw was Steve Austin challenging The Rock for the WWE Championship.
Okay.
What was the finish in that match?
Probably a DQ.
It was a DQ. And you just made my point because you don't remember it.
Because that was after a, there you go. And it was after a pay-per-view, not before one.
But it was
one.
To set up a longer-term story. And it was coming off of the fact that Steve Austin and The Rock had had so many matches beforehand that they didn't mind putting it on TV to tease people, to give somebody an idea of what they could see when these two fought, where the odds were in better favor of Steve Austin, or whether it was with a match stipulation.
We don't always have to repeat ourselves for what we did in the past. You can change it up too. And that's where they dropped the ball on this. I understand the story, the whole build up here and going back to it and, you know, a long-term storyline between the two. I get it. But you don't always have to do what was in the past as well. Women's Evolution, new things, new stuff, new opportunity, chance for them to do different things and not always have to go back to the year 1998, 1999 like it was. It's fine to change things up. And there, if you're going back to The Rock Austin, the night after pay-per-view, I don't like the DQ finish here for when they're going to fight in 3 weeks at a Hell in a Cell or 2 weeks now, for crying out loud. You know? Like, what the hell?
And,
terrible.
And just on the WrestleMania thing,
yeah.
Because they don't view... So, WrestleMania and the Saudi shows,
yeah.
They are one into themselves. And what I mean by that is... They are for the random guy who's clicking through, who's like, oh, my God, it's WrestleMania. Oh, my God, Bill Goldberg's back. Oh, my God, they're doing something with Tyson Fury. Oh, my God, it's Mike Tyson, and he's a referee.
Yep.
That is Hell in a Cell and some of these other secondary pay-per-views. They're built around the gimmick. And so Hell in a Cell is the pay-per-view theme. TLC is a pay-per-view theme. And so that's what's meant to draw you. And it's, oh, they happen to have Bayley and Sasha Banks, and they're in a story, so let's do a Hell in a Cell match, because they haven't done that. They added the stipulation to Roman Reigns versus Jey Uso to make it more personal for the Universal Championship. It's now an I Quit match.
Yep.
So Roman isn't going to accept I Quit as a winning thing. He wants Jey Uso to say that he's the tribal leader, and that is his version of I Quit. And then wherever the story goes from there is where it goes. But it's the stakes of that, and it's more so if Ronda Rousey was coming back, Ronda Rousey's doing WrestleMania against Sasha Banks. If they're doing Cyborg, right? Cyborg was the big name for a while.
Right.
If they're doing her as a one-off, she's doing the Saudi show, or she's doing WrestleMania. She's not doing Hell in a Cell, she's not doing TLC. She might do SummerSlam, but I think that's less likely. But yep. The point is that Sasha and Bayley, for their term of this story, and they're probably going to have subsequent matches after this, Hell in a Cell is perfect for them. Absolutely perfect for them.
Yep.
And using SmackDown as a teaser platform for that match to maybe the person who hasn't seen them in the ring together is exactly what they do. And you're right. You're right in this regard. You're right that the format that they've been trotting out there since 1997 is dated, but that's the format. At least we don't have to deal with Triple H promos for 20 minutes to open the show. Right.
Yeah.
So that's the one change, is that there's no 20 minute Triple H going, I'm the game and I'm this and
but,
all that stuff.
But when SmackDown is your best show, which we both agree on, for I think all the four shows, or five, you know, you NXT, AEW, Raw, four of them rather, you have a 2-hour program there fitted into that window. I'm fine with a little 5-6 minute opportunity of chat to build up this match here. If it's Raw, give me the match, because you get stupid 3 hours. But if it's SmackDown, I have no issue with the chit
chat. Because if they're true to format, Mike,
yep,
they'll do some sort of promo thing this week, and then they'll do the tag match.
Yes.
And one of them will get the... I mean, we know the formula.
It's right? Yeah, it's only a matter of time.
We know the formula.
Right.
So they're trying to make people think, oh, well, the draft is happening, and it's Sasha and Bayley. Maybe Banks wins the title.
Yep.
And that's what they're trying to get you to think. But that's not what they want. Like, either Bayley's going over at Hell in a Cell, or this is the Sasha Banks run that we have been waiting for since WrestleMania 32. And at WrestleMania 32... I went in there and I thought Banks should win this. Banks is the one that the 100,000 people are cheering for. This is the way that you set the tone for the women's division, is with Sasha Banks. And then she came out with Snoop and I knew Charlotte was winning.
See, I had
and that's Sasha. Because Sasha Banks is getting her shine by having Snoop sing her to the ring. And that's how you can tell with these different things. Mm. I remember we were sitting in the suite with John Cena Sr. one of many times, and he's a true blessing because he listens to me ramble about my thoughts on wrestling, and he's polite to me, even though I know he wants to just tell me to shut up. Which a lot of people do, by the way. A lot of people want to tell me to shut up, and I don't blame them. I talk too much, and I'm annoying. But people tolerate me.
But at least Mr. Cena listens.
He does listen.
He's a good man.
I think I corner him and that's it.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
But the thing about it was, we were talking about Enzo and Big Cass.
Oh, God.
And I knew that they were going to lose because they got the big promo to begin with. And I said, oh, this is them shining because they're about to lose in 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. They lost in four.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so easy to predict.
But that's the WWE formula, is that they give somebody... Wow, what an entrance. So WrestleMania in Orlando, and we'll get to AEW, and we'll wrap this up because I'm rambling right now.
But
the shine spots, right? Mm-hmm. So WrestleMania 33 in Orlando, it's a four-way women's match with Bayley wins and retains her Raw Women's Championship. It's Nia Jax, who really didn't get any type of a... She got pinned by the three other women in the match.
Yep.
Sasha Banks gets this great entrance. She took a flashy motorcycle down the ring, which, Stephanie took a motorcycle, or they did a cop thing with her. And Charlotte gets this big entrance that is similar to the entrance that her dad, Ric Flair, got at his WrestleMania retirement match in Orlando.
Same venue.
So those were the shine spots for those wrestlers.
Yeah.
And Bayley wins, and it's a WrestleMania match that I had really high expectations for that didn't deliver. And by the way, if you look back, Bayley beat Charlotte the same way that she has in the past with the turnbuckle spot.
So now that's interesting you say all that, because I totally, mentioning that match, again, didn't deliver, so I forgot. Didn't have high expectations, didn't really care about
it. I had huge expectations for that match.
Yeah, see, so that WrestleMania, there were so many matches on there, other ones, Taker, Roman,
which
Brock,
disappointed.
But it was a big buildup, though.
Nice job, your guy, Undertaker, showing up.
Listen, it's a name and two guys right there. Nice guy, Roman Reigns. Undertaker did the job for him, man. I mean,
Roman carried him. I know he did.
And you keep talking about it, which is true. He did. But that was the buildup of that show right there. Goldberg was in there. I don't care what people say. There were a lot of big name guys there, but that women's match, no build up there. The fact you remember that, good for you.
Oh no, the build up was good for it. It was Bayley is the one who beat Charlotte's pay-per-view winning streak.
The build
on,
up
on Fastlane.
Yeah,
roadblock, whatever the pay-per-view was before.
Fastlane.
And it was thrown away. It should have been, if you're going to take the pay-per-view win streak away from Charlotte, do it at WrestleMania.
Right. Or don't do it on a rinky dink pay-per-view.
Or actually, getting back to the Hell in a Cell thing, Sasha should have won in Boston.
Yeah. Well, that
she
was
should
the
have
other
won
one.
In Boston.
Yes, that was the other, like, kind of like the WrestleMania 32 one, Jimmy, with the with Snoop Dogg right there. So I'm looking forward to talking about that next week with the Hell in a Cell, a couple of matches before that there. But you're saying Sasha, you wouldn't be surprised if she wins. I wouldn't be shocked if Bayley wins. So we'll share our thoughts on that.
Next week. At some point they have to go all the way with Sasha Banks.
At some point, but
they're paying her all this money.
I know.
They're paying her a ton of money. Like, at some point you have to go all the way with her and give her a run with the title, right?
Yeah, and they let her have some time off, a decent amount of time off last year. So it's like she's back, right? And people love her. Kids love her. She's so over now. She's a baby face. But I don't know. I can totally see her better making the chase for the championship.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
AEW celebrates its 1 year on TNT this week. I think Mike and I, we both agree that AEW has been a good thing for pro wrestling. It's provided competition for WWE. It's put more money into people's pocket. But I want to look a little bit more critically at AEW and what they have done well and what they haven't done well. Mm-hmm. So I sent you an email this morning and I asked for your two best and worst moments in All Elite Wrestling. Mm-hmm. And I left it general so you can put your own personal spin on it. So for me, the highlight of the last year, and really the last year plus, is Chris Jericho. Yeah. Le Champion, as he likes to call himself. He has been a must-watch week to week on AEW during this All Elite Wrestling run. I was in Chicago when he won the AEW title over Adam Page. The way that Jericho shut down the We the People chant at the show we were at Boston University, he created the Inner Circle that night. His story match with Cody, I thought was good stuff. His story match with Jon Moxley was good. And Jericho loses the title, which I don't know that many people saw coming that soon, but we should have because Tony Khan loves Jon Moxley and da 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 da. And I even think that the Orange Cassidy story was a bit cartoonish. But the goal was to help a younger wrestler move up a level. And I know that Jericho has a lot of input on what people do. And I also know that Jericho versus Mike Tyson was supposed to happen, but it didn't. So I found week to week that Chris Jericho, whether it be his in-ring promos, his backstage stuff, even his commentary working with Tony Schiavone, who I love Tony Schiavone, I think Chris Jericho has really been the MVP of AEW. And it moved Chris Jericho, I think, to the more recent years of being somebody more than just the guy with the list. And I guess more so, Mike, after 29 years of Jericho and this AEW run, you're finally a fan of Chris Jericho.
It's true, Jimmy. I mean, not that I wasn't, I didn't appreciate him. I just wasn't in on Jericho. And now, yeah, I love what he has done. And again, you know, what I'm going to say here, Jericho, I'm a fan of what he's done. That is a credit to him. Look at how late he is in his career, where he was 20 years ago, to be able to get a fan like me to appreciate what he has done, being the first AEW champion. Incredible. Been the torch carrier. I mean, him and Cody, 1-1A right there for AEW. And, you know, Le Champion, the bubbly, you know, you talk about all of the things he's done in the promotion. He has been the face of AEW, so important and right there in the history books of this promotion. When it's all said and done, I mean, people are going to think of the WWF days. When you say WWF, you'll be thinking Hulk Hogan, but when you think AEW, you'll be thinking Chris Jericho. That's how good he's been for this promotion. And he has just been so good in the ring and so good on the microphone, too. That's half of what that's the most important thing of how he is with the crowd interaction there on the microphone. And Jimmy, you know, honestly, Jericho, I think the best worker in AEW, again, awesome heel. And you know what? To his credit, he doesn't need to have the best matches in the world. He doesn't need to have these matches that people remember because Jericho, the name, they know who he is. Good run over the course of 30 years. He has that crowd right there on his side. So it works for Jericho right there. And it was the perfect scenario for him to be the inaugural AEW champion. And again, I think, like you said, yeah, it may have been taken off him a little too early, the title, but still, what a run as the first ever AEW champ.
Well, and the thing that Chris Jericho has is he has the promo skills, which have people invested. He has the longevity that have people invested. So I think he gets forgiven if he doesn't have the five-star match, if he doesn't have the great, memorable match, but he has the moment.
Yep.
You know, the Page match was fine. The Cody match was fine. The Moxley match was fine. The Kenny Omega match was fine. But they weren't anything that were blowaway matches. Mm-hmm. But because you're emotionally invested in it, you think of it probably better than it actually was.
Yep.
Because the match he had with Kenny Omega, and this doesn't cross over the timeline of the last year, but that match he had in AEW with Kenny Omega was, it was okay.
Yeah.
But you remember that Jericho won, and you remember that Jon Moxley debuted.
Right.
I think the match he had in New Japan at Wrestle Kingdom with Kenny Omega was way better. But yep. There was a uniqueness to it. There was a different style to it. You know, one of the things that I think helped Jericho's match with Hangman Page, which was fine. It was a good match. It wasn't five stars. It may have been three stars, or, you know, it was a good, solid match.
Right.
But what made it was Jericho against a new opponent. And a new and the crowd helped it, because I was part of that atmosphere. You want to talk about a crowd that was horny for wrestling and horny for good wrestling? That was that crowd in Chicago,
yeah,
September of last year, because mm-hmm. you felt the vibe, you just felt it, and it was the new title, and it was the change the world thing, and then sure. They go to Jericho. that's kind of my big takeaway from AEW's first year. Yeah. On TNT is, I think Jericho's stuff has just been tremendous. Mm-hmm. So, Mike Riley, what in the last year has been your most positive takeaway from All Elite Wrestling?
I mean, so Jericho is there, so I'll go to the one right after that. I had a couple, so I'm going to change it up here. So the other one I'm going to go with is, I don't know how you're going to feel about this, Jimmy, but I'm going with Cody Rhodes.
Oh, good. I can dump right on him.
Go ahead. Rock it. Rock it out.
No, go ahead. Cody Rhodes.
I just think anytime you put Cody in an AEW scenario, it works. You were going back a year plus here. Let's start with the Double or Nothing from Vegas, where he smashes the throne. That set the tone there for AEW. The match with his brother, Dustin, awesome. The title chase with Jericho, really good. And I thought it was fantastic, even though MJF ended up the victor, but the three phases he had against him, the cage match against Wardlow. Wow. Fantastic. On an episode of Dynamite. Hard to believe that was earlier this year too, with a crowd. Inaugural TNT champion. Yeah, sure. Cody Rhodes is a vice president of AEW behind the scenes. And he is definitely right up there, like I mentioned with Jericho, as the, you know, I guess a cheerleader for AEW, but he's earned it. He has earned that spot. He is the perfect situation, perfect spot for that cheerleader there to be one of the faces of a promotion. Cody Rhodes, anytime he is on AEW, now, you know, aligning himself with Arn Anderson in there too, and I think it's fantastic. Anytime he has been in the spotlight of AEW, that's why Cody is one of the bright spots of the last year of AEW for me.
So I think that Cody, I don't know that he has earned it.
Okay.
This is something that I've documented in the past, is he was the fourth vice president. And he kind of backdoored his way into that spot. Mm-hmm. At least that's what people have told me. So, Cody, what I will say is, because we disagree fundamentally, I think Jericho has been the face of AEW, and you think Cody has been the face of AEW.
But Jericho's not far behind him.
And Cody liked your tweet when you said that, even though he wasn't tagged in the tweet.
Yeah, didn't he search it? Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, he searches his name. I don't think he does that anymore. I think he's learned not to.
Yeah, yeah.
But oh, I still laugh at that.
Yeah.
But I think that Cody has always had a program that you're emotionally invested in.
Mm-hmm.
The match with Dustin. While I didn't care about Sean Spears, the match at that pay-per-view was good, but it was because of Tully Blanchard. And is MJF going to turn on Cody? And then Cody having the title fight with Jericho, and then MJF turning on Cody. And then Cody got whipped on TV. He got lashed on TV by somebody. And you felt his pain because look at the welts on his back. Like, that hurt, man.
It was cringeworthy.
And then he loses to MJF. Mm-hmm. And then he gets the TV title, and now he's got it back, and he's doing it for the fans. Oh, God. Cheesy promo. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And actually, this is one of my negative things about AEW is because of all the stories that people in the business have told me, I've come to dislike Cody Rhodes.
Okay.
Because you remember, Mike, we went and we were at a Chaotic Wrestling show.
That's right.
And it was Cody against Ilya Markopoulos. And, you know, you saw me approach Cody. He signed a bunch of photos for us. Couldn't have been nicer, right?
Yeah, very nice.
And then he becomes the vice president of AEW and everybody talks crap about him. Mm-hmm. And now I'm like in this thing where it's like, oh, I like Cody.
Yeah.
But all these other people are saying he's a terrible negotiator. He's a snake. He's a weasel. He's this. He's that. Mm-hmm. And this is all stuff that I've documented. And you can find in the archives of something to rest of Wrestling Inside the Ropes.
Yep.
But Cody has given you memorable moments. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I still think that there's a villain run in him, but he's doing it for the fans, Mike Riley. Well, he shows up for the fans.
Well,
like, oh, could you be a cheesier baby face?
Well, hey, if he's going to show up for the fans, like you're saying, being the baby face, sure. If he's going to be the heel, it works either way. That is the most, that's the most talented performance in the world when they have that capability right there. You can be a face, you can be a heel just like that, so versatile. And that's why I think Cody has been one of the bright spots of AEW over the last year. Hands down, he's right there, man. He has been that good.
So my other positive about AEW is what All Elite Wrestling has shown me is that a major wrestling promotion can have week-to-week storytelling drink and week-to-week continuity in their stories on a national television basis and have successful quarterly pay-per-views with blow-off matches, and then they reset. With the exception of the last pay-per-view because of the humidity, I feel like AEW generally week to week has strong shows and has strong pay-per-views. We talked about some of the Cody moments, some of the Chris Jericho moments. You know, the Moxley Omega and Sanction match is memorable to me. That was on pay-per-view. The Hangman Page Omega Young Bucks AEW Revolution match, which was on pay-per-view, was great. But I think the tag title tournaments, even though the Young Bucks didn't win, they should have, when they got upset, like, we remember that. And we were in the building for it. We're like, Private Party? What?
Right.
Wait, the Young Bucks just got eliminated? The debut of Matt Hardy, the debut of Brody Lee, these are all the whipping of Cody on TV. Mm-hmm. Like, these are things that we remember. Jericho doing Tony Schiavone with Chris Jericho doing commentary with Tony Schiavone during the pandemic, during the really hard time of the pandemic, where they're taping in a garage in Atlanta.
Yep.
We remember these things. And that's something that they should be given credit for, is continuity from show to show, which is something that WWE could do and on SmackDown has done. And I think that they as a whole have done a better job of. But I think that continuity is probably the second biggest positive that I would take out of All Elite Wrestling's last year plus.
Yeah, no, I mean, without question. And I'm so glad you talk about Jericho on the commentary because, yeah, that's something I'll always remember. You know, he's not in the ring, but he's right there working behind the microphone. And yes, that's what AEW has done. It's been right at that level where it makes WWE better and in general wrestling better because, you know, you look at some of the guys in the independent scene, it gives them more opportunity to go for the top. Not that they're not happy where they are. Ring of Honor, Impact, other promotions.
Well, Samoa Joe's going to AEW, isn't he?
I think that would be great. I think that'd be perfect for him. I think that'd be a perfect spot for him. But is he going? Is he going or what? Do we know that for a fact?
Oh no, he's not going.
Yeah, there you go. So
I mentioned that because he did an interview. And I'll quote from the interview, quote, "Right now, I've been enjoying commentary on Raw. It's been a fun challenge. It's something very new, and I'm enjoying that. Obviously, I'm not done in the ring by any means. I think right now I'm just kind of exploring things, seeing how I feel about it. Aside from that, I've been doing a lot of voice acting lately," because he has a voice of God, according to Vince, according to his telling the story about Vince. "It's kind of fun and cool, and that's a very enjoyable thing. So some projects on the rise and some projects coming out really soon with Warner Brothers. It's a cool thing. I'm really fortunate. I'm happy that I'm doing things that I'm doing right now." So Samoa Joe, happy in WWE, despite Mike Riley's claim that he's unhappy.
Yeah, well, that's what he says. But I have no issue with him staying in WWE, but I think it would be better off for him to be in the ring where it's a wasted opportunity. We're probably not going to see that there. And
41 years old. Yeah, probably not in the title picture. Oh, well, injury history. Well, should take a full-time commentator's job. Get some health insurance.
Okay, fair enough on that spectrum. But if he wants to be in the ring, it's not going to get into WWE. And sure, with all the background stuff there, with the injury plague and so forth, they're going to be cautious of that. But if he wants to have a good run, to have another opportunity to be at the top of the mountain as a good run as a champion or go up against someone, AEW is the perfect spot for him right there. He ain't going to get that WWE. So
he's not going to get that AEW either.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, never know.
So sorry, so. My digression there.
Fine, no problem. You want my other top one?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so I'm going to go on a specific episode of AEW Dynamite, James. And it was, again, you talk about the height of the pandemic here. It was actually a week after the height of the pandemic. It was the March 18th episode. And this was supposed to be the big tease of two major debuts. And
this was the show that was going to be in Buffalo.
Yes.
Or Rochester, New York, one of those New York places. Taylor Hall's new hall. New
right.
Town.
Right. And you know what? To AEW's credit, they weren't holding back with anything when WWE was seeming to scramble here or just like kind of staying pat at the Performance Center. But AEW showed us as fans that, they were still going to give us everything they could, even without a crowd for a little bit, even without the, extra talent and families in there. But they had the debut of Matt Hardy. Matt Hardy was huge.
Brody Lee was also on that show.
The Dark Order Exalted one. Exactly. That was a long-awaited reveal right there. Huge. So
it was a great switch by them because everybody assumed that Matt Hardy was going to be the leader of Dark Order.
Right.
And it ended up being Brody Lee. And it's like, oh, wait, but where's Matt Hardy?
Right.
And Matt Hardy shows up at the main event spot to team with the Young Bucks, which was going to be their version of War Games. Blood and guts match, but they had to push it back and it became the stadium match and so on and so on and so on.
Which actually was very clever and that was a good match. And then, of course, Brody Lee gets the big push right away, challenges John Moxley for the World Heavyweight Championship. So at that point, this is why I'm saying it's such a big spot for AEW at that time right there. And it grabbed, I thought at least, the viewership. And really, it set some, more waves into the television ratings that they were better. They're the more popular show, the better of the two on Wednesday nights. And people, I think that really had everyone more focused on AEW. And still to this time, I think that's why they are right there people go out of their way for AEW on a weekly basis because of that right there. Without the crowd, they tell us that we're still going to give you some of our biggest storylines right here, and we'll put it even without the crowd. And that was a huge thing for AEW at that time.
Well, and they did Mike Tyson, which was going to lead to a match with Chris Jericho.
Yep.
They had Tyson bring out the TNT title, and they were going to do something with Jericho. And I think money got in the way of that, but who knows?
Yep. Right.
You want the downs? Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
My first one, it's just really easy. It's so broad, Jimmy. And I think you're going to agree with me, but I'm sorry. AEW, I'm all set. I'm really all set with their women's division. Okay. They need a serious injection here for the women's division. They really are not giving us anything that they can promise that they would have in this particular category for AEW. I can't see.
They had to bring in the National Wrestling Alliance women's champion.
Right. In Rio, the first women. Listen,
so, God. So the idea of them changing the world with Riho.
Yep.
I was okay with initially because I thought Britt Baker should have been the first women's champion because she had identifiable name recognition. Like enough people knew who she was and there was something there. They didn't give her the title. And now I think that was a smart move, not giving her the title, because now she has more of a character.
Yep.
And she has more people who are emotionally invested in her. So they tried to go with who they thought that was the best women's wrestler in the world who was available to them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you fix it, though. Do you go out and get Tessa Blanchard?
It's a name.
Do you want her on your roster?
It's you know what? We know the waves that she made there and the impact and the fact of the behind-the-scenes stuff. You could do that. You roll the dice a little bit. But, again, name, it works. It worked with Jericho, worked with some of these other guys, Moxley, Brody Lee. That might be the
move.
Those
are all good room guys.
I know.
Tessa Blanchard's going to come into your room and you're going to be like, whoa, he signed her?
Right, right. I know. But if
so,
they
Mike, what would you do to save the women's division then?
Either put it on the shelf for a while and just kind of be like, hey, listen, or just kill it for a little bit. And then revamp it behind the scenes and bring it back with that big boom. The women's division is back and better than ever. Maybe do that when you do get full audience back. But I think that's what I would do. Otherwise, get a name out there. Try to lure someone over from WWE if you can. And if Tessa Blanchard is that one there, not being from WWE, if she's the top one, you got to make a move,
Mike,
now because it's bad.
Who from that women's division are you most emotionally invested in?
From AEW?
Yes.
No one.
No one? Okay.
Nope.
So the answer is you put the title on Brandi Rhodes and you give Brandi Rhodes a microphone and you let her be a villain.
Fine. Go ahead.
How you get it. And you have her do short matches, you have her cheat to win, and you just let her talk because she has, if you've ever listened to her talk, she just has this arrogant cadence to her. Yep. Like she's better than everybody else. And you let her go with that. And whether her bell to bell stuff is good or it's not good. Yep. And I'm not one to judge whether in this case her bell to bell stuff is good or passable. But what you're going to do with her promos and the way that she talks down to people, you're going to get some emotional investment into who Brandi Rhodes is. And that's how you can spark the women's division. And then when you have the baby face who's going to come in and eventually win that, it's going to mean that much more eventually.
And who better for Brandi to get advice from if she has to, from her husband, Cody, who is fantastic all around, James.
Well, and you could have this dynamic where Cody's fighting for the fans and Brandi's acting like she is, but she's not. And
right.
it could have an interesting dynamic there.
Sure. Go ahead. Do that too. Yeah. I have no issue with that. Otherwise, I like my plan with the shelf life, put it away, and then bring it back. So
yeah, they're not going to do that. They're not going to do that.
Well, they got to do something now because it's pretty bad right now. The women's division, it's terrible.
And I just gave you the best suggestion ever to.
I'm not opposed to it. I'm not opposed to it.
I didn't say you were. I'm just telling you that it's the best idea ever to fix their women's division. One of the my most worst moment or my biggest gripe with All Elite Wrestling is how Tony Khan, who wanted to change the world with a group of wrestlers who had amazing buzz and upward movement based on their YouTube channel and non-WWE promotions. And what we found out in a year plus is Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, and Adam Page, they haven't broken through to the next level.
Yep.
Kenny Omega might be Jerry Lynn. The Young Bucks haven't felt special week to week like I thought they should have, or I thought they were going to. And Adam Page, after all this hype and being in the first ever AEW championship match, feels like a bust of a prospect. Now, Kenny Omega has the most wins in AEW, but it doesn't feel like it to me. This world title tournament hopefully makes him more important and puts a bigger focus on the self-proclaimed best bout machine. So there's still upward movement. For the Young Bucks, who have now turned into the super aggressive F the World tag team, which we saw a little bit of during the AEW Revolution tag team title match with Hangman Page and Omega that we mentioned before. Mm-hmm. If I see more of that, I'm in, and I think you're going to get more people in. Although it is worth noting that a few weeks ago, a tag match with the Young Bucks did break over 1 million viewers for that quarter hour. So maybe I'm a little late to that opinion that the Young Bucks haven't felt special, because maybe they are feeling more special than I am feeling them to feel special. But the payoff for the Bucks is winning the tag belts from FTR. Like, that's the payoff. And whether it happens in November or February, whatever, that's the payoff. And I think part of the reason the Bucks and Omega were concerned about the pushback that they could get pushing themselves to the top of All Elite Wrestling at the launch, it's the kind of crap that Cody has been dealing with. And AEW has made me dislike Cody, as we've just documented. So it's kind of this thing with the Elite that they haven't felt like the Elite consistently. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when they won the stadium match, that was the first time that the Elite felt like the Elite. And I need more consistency with that. And so maybe that's still coming. But instead of changing the world, AEW made Chris Jericho, Dean Ambrose, Cody, and Luke Harper their first singles champions. Mm-hmm. And so far, they've taken former WWE stars and proved WWE was really right about some of them. Shawn Spears, FTR. I love Matt Hardy, but Matt Hardy hasn't made as much of an impact in AEW, and they're letting him continue to wrestle when he's concussed. Zack Ryder, Matt Cardona, he was in for 5 shows and his VP friend just kind of let him go.
Yep.
So what I think that AEW needs to do, and Tony Khan specifically, is, and maybe they're on the track of doing this now a year in, is they really need to change the world. And we need more of a showcase for Omega, the Young Bucks. I need to see more of MJF in top spots. They should have put the world title on MJF, or they should have done a better finish that was more definitive than what they did. Jungle Boy looks like he's going to be a star, but he's not there yet. They need to do more of putting better talents, like Lance Archer. I saw his work in New Japan with Moxley. It's good, but nobody believes Lance Archer is winning the world title. Do you? No?
Nah, probably not yet. Although with Jake the Snake, you never know, right? But right now...
Brian Cage with Taz, he's the FTW champion.
Like, so, okay. Yeah, no. I keep going on this.
Yep. No. Like, I guess they're... Those two guys are size guys, and those are WWE prototype guys, right? You're not supposed to be WWE light. And I feel like too much of what they are doing is WWE light, with going with a lot of the size guys. over the talented guys. And and granted, you know, MJF and Moxley, that was the first, MJF was the first challenger to Moxley that I feel like wasn't, well, Darby Allin was in there, but on the bigger stage, like John Moxley trying to conquer the giant.
Mm-hmm.
So Cage was one pay-per-view. It's Lance Archer next this week on their anniversary show. It was Brody Lee. I just feel like I need more.
Yeah.
I need more. And there's just there hasn't been that connect with AEW trying to change the world. Right?
Yeah.
So I think and this kind of this ties into really my second point.
Mm.
About what I haven't really liked AEW, and it's kind of a cause and effect thing.
Yeah.
AEW kind of ruined what made NXT special. So NXT was a 1-hour show on the network, and that was kind of the hardcore of hardcore fans.
Yep.
And they'd see the big payoffs at takeovers. You know, NXT is being criticized for being the show that it really always has been, but because it's losing in the ratings to another show that has former WWF guys on it.
Yep.
So maybe it's just me, but the NXT fan and the AEW fan, they want the same things.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, they have to pick a side and pick a sports team and defend it till the end. And the reality is, we can watch both. You, the fan, can watch both. You watch one show live, you watch the other on delay. You can watch both shows on delay. You can do the clicker thing, but you really don't have to. We're on it. We either have DVRs or we have the network or, you know, AEW On Demand is on Bleacher Report. So you can watch it on Friday. You don't have to pick. You can watch and enjoy both, and you can do it on your own time.
Well,
so a lot to unpack there, Mike Riley.
Well, So just one thing you talk about, did AEW make NXT worse? Just my question is, did they actually make it worse or did NXT make itself worse? Because they were the ones that said, oh, well, AEW is going to show on Wednesday night. Let's do ours on Wednesday night on USA. And we'll go ahead and, you know, go head to head with them. And sure, they're putting the pressure on them for competition purposes right there. I think that, you know, NXT could have their own separate night of wrestling. But again, they want to go head to head with AEW right here. So that's my only counter argument.
But NXT
there
was on Wednesday night before AEW.
But they were on the network, though, and I understand
exactly
what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. I get that. But and they wanted to bring out a broader audience and so forth. But did they actually have to go USA Wednesday night? Could they? I think they could have tried maybe Tuesday or Thursday. They didn't have to go head to head with them, but they did.
So that's USA Network, right? So AEW picked Wednesday night because the NBA is on ESPN Wednesday night. So they wouldn't be preempted.
Right.
That was the main reason why TNT wanted AEW on Wednesday nights.
Right.
The reason why NXT was on USA Network was because USA Network wanted to counter program. And how do you say no to $30 million a year or $40 million or $50 million, whatever it was? Because NXT, especially now, if there's no TV deal for either of these companies are gone.
100% agree. This is what they need right now with the advertising and so forth without fans being in the building. But for having AEW making NXT worse, I think NXT may have made itself worse from a product standpoint as a fans do watch that they're trying to do whatever they can, go neck and neck with AEW where it's not working all the time. That's where I think that they may have made themselves worse than AEW made NXT worse.
So I'm not saying, I'm saying NXT has been the same promotion that it always has been.
Right.
We're gathering up the best of the independent wrestlers, and now there's a little bit of competition for that because AEW is grabbing independent wrestlers.
Okay.
But it's trying to be the king of the indies while still developing people and changing them from the indie style to the WWE style.
Yeah.
And it's 2 hours instead of one, but AEW and NXT are kind of the same thing. They're going for the same thing, except AEW got a TV station with more viewers, and it got Chris Jericho, and it got Dean Ambrose. and it got some WWE names, and it got people who got over on their own on YouTube, and Ring of Honor and Impact and New Japan. And what NXT did was it went from just a network-based show to 2 hours, and you know they needed more talent, and they needed to accelerate different stories. But the product was the same. It was WWE's third brand that the hardcore fans loved, and now they got to watch it on network TV. But because it was losing in ratings to AEW, it became the inferior product to AEW. And that I just think is a bad perception. And by the way, I've probably been guilty of that in the last year.
Hmm. Well, and here we are a year ago around this time too, even before, you know, you look at the Survivor Series where there was such a huge breakout show for NXT, you know, putting their superstars on the match, i.e. Rhea Ripley, along those lines there. But NXT, they were at a point when we actually did have an audience in, you know, live crowd, I'm saying, they were ready to go on tour. They were ready to be different cities. That obviously changed with the pandemic here. But
and specific, Mike, you mean touring for their live TV on Wednesday nights?
That's correct. Yes. And that threw a monkey in the wrench right there with the pandemic. So, you know, a lot of things altered because of that. But, you know, to their credit, and I think that's what's best for business here when you have both of them going head to head. Sure, the product may have been down, may still not be the same for what you've seen over the years, but when they are having a competition, it's best for business sometimes.
Mike, your second worst moment or feelings of AEW the last year plus?
Yeah, I'll just say this, and it's really not too much, but I think they've overdone it a little bit. You talk about the WWE guys that made the jump to AEW. And my whole thing here, James, is, listen, I think it's great for a little bit. You see Jake the Snake Roberts. It's cool to see Diamond Dallas Page. It's cool to see, you know, Bret Hart right there. He revealed the AEW title at Double or Nothing. But you don't have to. I think it's a little overkill where AEW is having these WWE Hall of Famers put their own talent over. And Lance Archer relying on Jake the Snake Roberts. Tully Blanchard there. Sean Spears. You know, DDP helping out Cody. Even Arn Anderson, for that matter. I know it's a good storyline there where you can never trust an Anderson and so forth.
Storytelling, not line.
Well, it's storyline. if you never try. Fine, get the shot glass. Let's go. Here we go. That's two for you, one for me tonight. I just think that if you're trying to build your own promotion, why do you need to rely on old timers here put you over? Why do you have to do that? You know, maybe a one-off or something, but not week after week. It got a little old, and it's just something I lost interest in. And too much of Diamond Dallas Page, too much of Jake the Snake Roberts, and even too much of Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson. Arn Anderson, it still intrigues me a little bit. But other than that, though, I'm all set on the legend stuff. I want AEW. I want full organic.
So there has to be, like, Jericho was the right play. Dean Ambrose was the right play.
Yeah,
I think
that's
Matt
fine.
Hardy was the right play, even though they've misused him.
Yep.
But you don't want to have too many of those guys. Like, Mike Chioda showed up for, what, 1 week, 2 weeks?
Yeah, well, that's it. In and out.
Eric Bischoff did a one-off.
Yep.
You can have a one-off, but it's the lingering around and doing nothing with. Like, they had Rusev playing video games.
Yeah.
Is that the best use of Rusev?
Yeah, get out of here. No way.
Isn't that why he left, Vince?
Right. Right. So
I think, that's the complaint, is Rusev wasn't happy how he was being used.
Right.
So now he's doing video games with Penelope Ford and Kip Sabian?
Right.
Kip Sabian?
Yeah, Sabin. Stupid. So dumb. So, I mean, yeah, you have Matt Cardona there for a couple of weeks, too. You mentioned him earlier.
Five shows. Good friend Cody is. Getting him five paychecks.
Right,
get him
right.
A regular contract.
Right. I'm just going with the old-timers to put over your current guys. I think that shows weakness on behalf of AEW. One off, no problem. Relying on him too much. The exception is Arn Anderson. That's my exception right there, because that is, you know, again, Four Horsemen, the whole background there, and you know, Cody and his family, rather, and everything. I think it's great. Other than that, though, I'm kind of losing interest with the other ones. No interest.
So that was your AEW 1 year anniversary show. Did you like it? Did you like it, Boston?
Hey, I mean,
How'd you like it? Bend over, Boston. That's your AEW in 1 year. How'd you like it?
You know, not bad. Listen, for what they had for the first year, I think the overall agreement is the big improvement needed for the women's division. Major improvement necessary.
So I joke about that, but I think AEW is good for business.
Yeah.
It's good that more wrestlers are getting, but it's not this perfect promotion. And I think that we're figuring out that it's a good promotion. It has a lot more hype and a lot more expectations to be fulfilled, mm-hmm. but it's a good step in the right direction. And there are things that they can improve upon and be better at. But I think that Tony Khan and the Young Bucks and Cody all got a reality check when certain things didn't go their way, like the Dark Order back in January or December. It was December when they had the Dark Order close the show.
Yep.
And they got all this backlash, like, what was that? Why are they there? And it was Marty Scurll was going to be the leader, and Marty resigned with Ring of Honor.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the real first taste of, what do you mean you don't like our ideas? And how they handled it going forward wasn't great.
Yep.
But I think that was a reality check. And what I'm here to tell you is they're a good promotion. They'll make a ton of money. They'll help wrestlers make a ton of money. But they need to do more to get to the level of a million viewers a week, 1.5 million viewers a week.
Right.
And it could be that wrestling just isn't going to draw that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like SmackDown is 2 million plus or minus.
Mm-hmm.
Raw is like under 2 million. So that might be that there's kind of burnout on wrestling, because look at all the promotions you have right now. And this isn't including the indies. It's WWE. It's AEW. It's NXT, which I know is under the WWE umbrella, but they're their own little brand. You have Impact, which has been really good. You have Ring of Honor, which I have to catch up on their pure title tournament, which I've been told has been fabulous. They're going back into their bubble this week to tape some more shows. And then you have New Japan, which the G1 is ongoing. It may have just wrapped up. I have to catch up on that. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of wrestling going on right now. And it's like, I can read all about it, but I want to experience and watch it. And because I think that our audience is WWE 1 and then AEW 2, like that's kind of the priority, is to make sure that I'm up to speed with what our audience is.
Right.
And so AEW is the clear number 2 company, but it has some things to improve on.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there was a period of time over the last year where AEW was at the top, but you know, with the emergence of Roman Reigns as the SmackDown you know, Universal Champion and at the top of that promotion and so forth, that's where I think WWE has taken the reins right there, and no pun intended, they are the number one promotion. And AEW, you know, still, like you said, some things to improve on, but still very young in the game here compared to the WWE, a lot to improve on. They are the clear-cut number two.
So AEW, as far as like hardcore fan buzz,
mm-hmm.
I think, and their week-to-week show was the best, but it was never even close to being number one. Mm. Like when the best that you're doing is a quarter hour of over a million,
yeah,
you've still got a million more fans to go before you catch SmackDown. You've still got, you know, at least 750,000 fans to go to catch Raw.
Yeah.
So until that they break those numbers where they're beating Raw and SmackDown or tying them, they can't be considered the number one promotion. And this is something that
well
I hear a lot of with Eric Bischoff, right?
Yep.
Because there was never a WCW Nitro reunion show.
Right.
There was an ECW One Night Stand and then a second One Night Stand.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a fan buzz for it. But I think that at the time, more people could tell you about WCW than they could ECW.
Oh, without question.
And that's star power and that's eyeballs on it. But as far as like, if you knew about ECW, mm-hmm. you thought ECW was better than what you saw on Monday nights.
Yep.
And that's a general statement. That's how I felt a lot of the time, because I was getting 1 hour of Taz and Rob Van Dam and Sabu. And I was just getting this counterculture underground program. And I felt like I was part of it. Like I had discovered this band and nobody else is supposed to know about my band except for these 500 people that go to a Buddhist temple to watch wrestling in Waltham. Like that's, yeah, yeah. But that's how I felt about it. And nobody's going to take my underground promotion away from me until they went bankrupt because Paul Heyman did Paul Heyman things and that was the end.
Right.
But there was never a point in time where ECW was the number two company. Mm-hmm. It was always the number three company. But there were points in times where I felt like they were the best wrestling company in the world. Mm. But the numbers from a rating standpoint and from a business standpoint didn't pan out that way. And that's where WWE is this global brand and AEW is this nice number two company.
Right. Yeah. And I think a lot of people look at AEW similar to what you said there years ago, where, you know, they're kind of a little hidden gem there and so forth. A lot of people consider them the modern day WCW. And the question
is, I think people think AEW is some sort of, it's closer to ECW, but it's on WCW's TV.
Okay. Yeah. But I'm saying for WCW, being the direct competition there for the WWE years ago, ECW was not, let's be honest. They weren't. They were not direct competition. WCW was.
No, and especially the fact that Vince was paying them.
Right. Well, exactly.
Vince was paying them a developmental fee. Them,
right. Have them appear on Raw, front row or something like that too, and just be part of the show. Exactly. But I just think that people look at this. Yes, they are on WCW television, but they look at it where years ago you had WWE wrestlers jump ship to Ted Turner. And yeah, there have been a few here that have gone over to AEW. The question is, I mean, yeah, you have Chris Jericho. It's almost like who's next?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the 1997 thing is like, oh, disgruntled WWE guy. Well, he's got to go to AEW. Mm-hmm. There's a whole bunch of independent stuff like Gallows and Anderson went to Impact. Eric Young went to Impact. Mm-hmm. Zack Ryder had 5 shows on AEW. Rusev is being misused. So
right,
like
right.
Not every disgruntled WWE guy, poor Mike Bennett and Maria, they do a one-off for the National Wrestling Alliance. And now they're just kind of doing indie shows because either they don't want to sign with a different promotion or no promotion wants them.
Right. Right. And hey, Mike's available for work. Hit him up. He'll do a great job. Hit him up on Twitter.
Yeah, absolutely. Any closing thoughts, Mike Riley?
I'm looking forward to, the future of AEW over the next year. I mean, it's crazy how here we were a year ago, James, at that second episode of Dynamite. I mean, listen, it's just the way of the world right now with the packed full house at Boston University. And, you know, maybe we get some crowds back sooner than later. But I'm looking forward to see what happens over the next year of AEW as we talk about their first year in existence. And I'm also looking forward to next week talking a little bit more about Hell in a Cell, which is coming up.
Hell in a Cell, the WWE draft.
Yep.
Those will be amongst our topics unless something totally off the grid pops up. But, you know, that's the plan for next week. Each week you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.